Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, we're looking at a video of Sean McDowell talking about the problem of evil. And normally, I avoid commenting on appearances, but let me just preface this by saying that I mean this in a good way, but Sean's hair in this video looks like a scaled-down model of the equatorial ridge on Iapetus. Anyway, now that I've put that picture in your head, let's take a look at what he has to say.
Why does God allow evil? All of us, at some point in our lives, have asked this question and wrestled with it.
Yes, this is true. Which, in my opinion, is another point against God in this whole thing. You see, if there really is a good solution to the problem of evil, God could just give it to us. He wouldn't need flawed apologists attempting to explain it and failing. If God exists, is benevolent, is all-powerful, wants us to have a relationship with him, and there is actually a good solution to the problem of evil, then he would share the solution to the problem of evil with us in order to facilitate a better relationship with us. But alas, we are left here to flounder on our own in much the same way as we would be doing if there was no God in the first place.
If God is all-powerful, he can stop evil. If God is all good, wouldn't he want to stop evil? And yet evil exists. So some skeptics would say maybe an all-powerful good God does not.
Exactly. If God really is all-powerful and really doesn't want there to be evil in our lives, then there wouldn't be evil in our lives. End of story. The existence of evil could mean one of a few things. It could mean that there is something outside of God's control, meaning God is not all-powerful. It could mean that God does want there to be evil in our lives, meaning that God is not all good. It could mean that there's just no all-powerful, benevolent God in the first place. And I'm sure some of the more creative among you can figure out a handful of other options as well.
It's a question that Christians certainly wrestle with. We see in the Bible, people like David, people like Job, like Joseph, asking for justice.
None of whom were actually Christians, technically speaking. Now, maybe that's a nitpick, but it does bother me to a certain extent that Christians impose theology onto books that were written hundreds to thousands of years before their religion even existed. Yeah, I know if they're actually right, then, well, they're right. But it does seem at least a little insulting to the Jews that still exist today to be claiming these Jewish patriarchs as Christians, kind of like how Mormons baptize people posthumously.
But we also see a lot of non-believers, like Einstein, who's clearly one of the great thinkers in the history of the world, who believe that somehow the science and math of the universe pointed towards a God, but he couldn't believe in the Christian God because of the existence of pain and suffering.
The God that Einstein believed in was closer to Spinoza's God than the Christian God, that is, a type of deistic God or universal consciousness. Maybe the problem of evil played a role in his belief stopping short of actual theism, maybe it didn't, but how about we stop bringing Einstein into these theology debates? His opinion on the matter is pretty irrelevant at this point.
People like Darwin, who gave us Darwinian evolution, really at its core, his problem was suffering and evil within the world.
Darwin did become more agnostic as time went on, and the death of his father and daughter had the biggest impact on his faith. But when reading the words that he actually wrote, it seems that the teaching of hell is what convinced him that Christianity wasn't true, rather than the idea that a loving God wouldn't allow his father and daughter to die in the first place, having written, "I can indeed hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true. For if so, the plain language of the text seems to show that the men who do not believe, and this would include my father, brother, and almost all my best friends, will be everlastingly punished, and this is a damnable doctrine." So, not so much the problem of evil as the problem that the God that is supposed to be perfectly just set up the ultimate system of injustice.
Where do we begin to tackle an issue as big as this? So what is evil? Sometimes when we think about evil, we think there's good and evil, these equal and opposite forces that kind of are competing against each other.
In my experience, that's pretty close to how apologists present it. But of course, the evil force can't be equal to God because God is supreme. And this, of course, just brings you back around to the problem of evil. God could have chosen not to create the ultimate evil being, but he chose to create him anyway.
That's not what evil is. See, you can have good without evil, but you can't have evil without good.
Well, I take issue with that, but let's hypothetically grant it for now. That means that God could very well have made the universe perfectly good with no evil, and that is possible according to this statement, which means that the existence of evil is God's fault. God chose to allow it, meaning that God cannot be perfectly good because a perfectly good being would want the universe to stay perfectly good, and God had the power to do that, but chose not to.
You can't have evil without good.
Good and evil are not nouns. They're not discrete things that exist. They are points on a spectrum that are related to our preferences. If you can have good without evil, then you can also have evil without good. In fact, the Christian afterlife is a perfect example of that. Just imagine a universe that is hell, but there is no heaven. The people in this universe could be perfectly aware that they are completely miserable and unhappy without the existence of anything that would make them happy. And it could be argued that good and evil are actually comparative points. So when you take away everything that we consider good now and leave these people in an evil hypothetical universe, then something that we might call evil now will be the new standard of good by comparison. But you have the same problem with heaven. Heaven is eternal good, no evil. And one of the proposed reasons for the existence of evil is so that we can fully appreciate the good. But if we can go to an eternal and perfectly good place, it stands to reason that we will cease to appreciate it, as there will no longer be any evil by which we will know that heaven is good.
Think about, like, truth and a lie. You can have truth without somebody telling a lie, but you can't tell a lie unless there's first such a thing as truth.
I don't really think that these things are analogous, especially because whether or not a statement qualifies as a lie is not necessarily tied to whether or not the statement comports with reality, but whether or not the person making the statement sincerely believes it to be true. You see, I am convinced that the Christian God does not exist, but I do not call most apologists liars because I have no way of determining the sincerity of their beliefs. I'm sure there are some out there that are just grifters, but there are others that really truly believe what they say. So, from my perspective, none of them are making statements about the existence of a God that match up with reality in any way, shape, or form, so their statements are not true. But they aren't lies unless the person making the statement is aware that their statements don't match up with reality, and then they choose to make that statement anyway. And actually, come to think of it, this does kind of analogize good and evil. Hypothetically, let's say you were kidnapped as a baby and raised in a tower, isolated from society. From my perspective, you've never known anything but evil. To you, maybe you're not enjoying your life as much as you think you could be, but your view of good and bad will be so distorted from mine that for you, just leaving your home once will be one of the most exciting moments of your life. But to me, that's just a mundane event that happens pretty much every day. Okay, maybe before the pandemic it happened every day, but hey, there's another great example about how good and bad are movable points on a spectrum. Before COVID, just going to visit people was a normal everyday thing, not really good or bad, just something you do. Now, it's seen as a much gooder good. So, in this sense, I would say that good and evil are dependent upon our experiences, and the perception of one almost necessitates the perception of the other one to a certain extent.
Unless there's first such a thing as truth, to be corrupted.
Except that truth and lie are values that describe how well a statement conforms to reality and includes the perception of the person making the statement in the determination of whether or not the statement is seen as truth or lie. It is hypothetically possible to have a world where the only statements ever made are known by the people making the statements to be false. So yes, you can have lies without truth. No, that is not a very realistic scenario, but neither is one where everybody continually tells the truth with nobody lying. If you get to use highly implausible hypotheticals to make your point, then so do I.
That's what evil is like. Evil is a corruption of something that is first good.
No, I'm pretty sure you got it backwards. Good is just an improvement on something that was previously considered evil. After all, I consider the COVID-19 vaccine to be good. It works by making changes to the virus that make it recognizable by our immune system without actually infecting us with the virus. It is taking something evil, the virus, and making it good. See how it can go both ways like that?
So if evil is a corruption of good, then good must exist, and if good exists, then interestingly, there must be a God.
Nope. If good exists, then that means there must exist beings with preferences. Things that match their preferences are seen by them as good, and things that go against their preferences are seen as bad or evil. No God required, no God even indicated.
So when somebody raises the problem of evil, what they're assuming is there's a real standard of goodness that exists, objective good.
No, we're raising the point that we humans have preferences regarding our own well-being, and if there's a God, he doesn't seem to take those preferences into account at all, making the claim that he is perfectly good fall flat. Now, sure, you could say that if good and bad are all preferential, then yes, there can be a God that exists that is perfectly good by his own preferences, thereby eliminating the problem of evil because his preference for good just doesn't include the same thing as humanity's preference for good. But then you'd lose that objective standard of good that you guys love so much, unless you want to just argue that might makes right, and so now God can impose his preference for good onto us even though we don't agree with it.
And if that is the case, then there must be a God to ground that good.
No, there must simply exist beings with preferences.
So raising the problem of evil is kind of an indirect piece of evidence that there first must be a good moral standard, namely a God, a moral lawgiver, to ground that good.
Why does good need to be grounded? How is it grounded? More importantly, if I grant that good needs to be grounded, how does that square with the fact that most people, including Christians, consider a lot of the actions of God to be immoral? You wouldn't have apologists arguing that wiping out the Amalekites was a good thing, justified by whatever unsubstantiated accusations they like to make about Amalekite culture and behavior, if it wasn't first recognized that genocide is actually a bad thing. If God were the ultimate standard of good, and he gave this ultimate standard to his human creations, then you'd think we'd just agree with his actions by default.
So this helps us frame the question, but it doesn't tell us why God allows evil. Why doesn't he stop it? Well, one way to make sense of this is the purpose for which human beings exist.
Yeah, pretty much just to be entertainment for God. And actually, here's a thought. Why does God need entertainment or companionship or whatever other reason you can think of that he created us? Why does he want this interaction? Can God even have desires? To desire something is to recognize that there is something imperfect that could be fixed with whatever it is you desire. Since God desired to create the universe and us, then that means there was something imperfect in his existence that would be solved by having a universe to play in. So how can God be perfect if he has desires? There was a point, according to Christian theology, where there was nothing but God, and that wasn't enough for God, implying that he alone is not perfect, or he would have never wanted anything else.
Why are we here? God has not made us like trees, he's not made us like mountains, he hasn't made us like animals.
Oh, but he has made us like animals, very much so, to a point where you cannot define the word animal without the definition describing a human.
God has uniquely given human beings the ability to make meaningful choices.
What is it that makes a choice meaningful versus not meaningful? Animals make choices too, and their choices can affect their lives. Is it the ability to plan for the future that makes a choice meaningful? Because a lot of animals don't do that very well. They just choose to do what they want to do now, regardless of what the future consequences of that action may be. But there is a growing body of evidence suggesting that there are other non-human animals that do engage in this sort of planning behavior, including rats, corvids, and apes. The way I see it, something is meaningful if it has meaning to us. This is necessarily subjective and does not in any way require a God to tell us what we consider to be meaningful and what we do not.
And that's because God wants to be in a relationship with us. He wants to allow us to have meaningful relationships with other people.
So relationships are what are meaningful? Does that mean that monogamous birds can have meaningful relationships? Companionable dogs? Hell, even cats, widely seen as selfish assholes who are only interested in what their humans can do for them, enjoy relationships. My cat does not like to be alone, so we'll hang out in the same room as its humans are in, even when she's not looking for the physical warmth of cuddling up. She doesn't like noise, but if all the humans are in the same room, even if the kids are being noisy, she'll be right there with us, looking annoyed at all the noise. And that's an interspecies relationship. There are plenty of animals that enjoy relationships with their own kind. How do you know that these relationships are not meaningful to them? Sure, they may not be able to express the meaningfulness of such relationships in a way that we can easily understand, but that doesn't mean that they are completely devoid of meaning.
And if you create beings capable of loving, then guess what? You also have to have beings capable of choosing not to love.
And God's desire to be loved is indicative of his imperfect nature that left room for improvement. Otherwise, he wouldn't have felt the desire to be loved in the first place.
Now, if I found out, for example, that my wife was a robot and she was programmed to say the right thing, do the right things to make me think that she really was the most faithful, loving wife, it would completely change our relationship.
Sure, but I don't really think the libertarian free will that Christians use as a solution to the problem of evil is even possible in a world where God has as much control as Christians claim he does. You see, God knows everything. He knows every detail of every interaction you will ever have in your entire life. And he had an active hand in making you, choosing your genetic makeup, deciding which parents you would have, and knowing all the downstream consequences of every single choice he made while making you. So, in this respect, God has literally made all the choices for you throughout your entire life by choosing to make you in just the way he did. He could have tweaked your genetics to give you a different emotional predisposition. He could have put you in a different family environment, given that he had the same level of control over your parents' lives as well. He has an infinite supply of potential people that he could make for any union, and he knows all of the choices that each one of these potential people will ever make. So if he wanted the world to be good, he could have just chosen to make the people that would only make the world good. I am willing to grant that it is possible to know the future and still have free will exist at the same time, but I am absolutely not willing to grant that free will exists when the person who knows the future also has complete control over the past. So if God is as powerful as the Christians like him to be, then free will cannot exist, because then there's an infinite number of potential universes with an infinite number of potential people that God could have made, and yet he chose to make the one with not just imperfect people, but a lot of just downright bad people.
The only reason there's value with my wife is that we choose to love each other. That's what God chose with us.
He really didn't, though. He chose to make people that he knew when he made them, they would make choices that would result in them not having a relationship with him, and so would end up in hell. He cannot be the creator, be all-knowing, and also not be responsible for the choices that his creations make. There is no way around the robot problem. God just made most of the robots in a way that will give him an excuse to torture them later, and made some in a way that would fulfill his desire for a relationship with an imperfect being. Now, I feel like the response to desire being the result of imperfection will be something along the lines of him wanting companionship. For whatever reason, God didn't control the conditions of his external to space-time existence, and so he was completely alone and made humans to keep him company. That's not an imperfection of God. That's an imperfection in whatever plane of existence he was existing non-temporally in. Well, just remember, God is three people, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So he's not alone. He's got two others there that are just as perfect as he is to share a perfect existence and perfect relationships with. His desire for more companionship means that at least two of his three beings are imperfect for the purpose of companionship. And of course, that's just ignoring all of the nonsense assumptions that I had to make to get to a God even existing outside of space and time.
He gave us the ability to choose to follow him and to do good and to do wonderful things and have courage and fight for peace and show justice. But if God's going to give us the ability, by definition, without free will, he has to give us the ability to choose wrong things and bring suffering into the world.
I mean, if I grant that he had to give us that ability, I still don't have to grant that he had to make the people that he knew in advance would choose the wrong thing. So it's still on him.
So yes, God knew that we would do horrible things without free will. But God also knew that it's only by giving us that free will that we could truly love God.
So to satisfy his own selfish desire to be loved, he condemned billions of people to an eternity of torment in hell. If anything, this makes the problem of evil even worse, though the problem would just go away immediately if you just come to the position of believing that God does not necessarily want good for his creation. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Renan Hellfire, who says, "Good video, but showing a pic of aliens when saying alien kind of triggered me a little." Indeed, I actually considered whether or not to do that, but ultimately I decided that it's the same franchise and the Nukem from Orbit meme is probably the most well-known meme of the franchise, so I went with that one. If it makes you feel better, I had seen both the movies before I made the video where I used that meme. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the imperfections that create the desire that is my channel. If you'd like to be proof of perfection, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my PO Box address. See you next time!